back, steps up, heaves one down the middle of the field into the end zone, and Nix makes the catch for the touchdown. He went up with the big hands and caught it on the Hail Mary.
Boots one, returnable for Williams from his own 20. Lost the ball, and the Giants say they have it, and they do.
Devin Thomas recovered it, but the rookie Jaquan Williams punched it out.
Manning out of the shotgun set, and he's back to throw. Finds the pocket. Deep ball down the left sideline, and it's going to be caught. Was he inbounds?
Yes. Manningham on the sideline.
Brady's under pressure. Brady's chased. Brady heaves one down the middle of the field into the end zone. A jump ball, and it's incomplete, and the ball game's over, and the Giants have won Super Bowl 46.
Now, here's your host, Lance Meadow.
Welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. So glad you could join us. With you for the next 60 minutes, breaking down all that took place in the 2014 NFL Draft. We will go over each and every Giants pick. We'll get your feedback at 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. You can also join in on the conversation via Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. You can follow and interact with me directly at Lance Meadow, one word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. So glad you could join us this morning. So the Giants wrapped up the draft on Saturday, and they are welcoming in a handful of new faces to the roster. And remember, there's no rookie minicamp this year compared to previous years. Since the draft was pushed back to May, the rookies will come to the facility, and they will automatically be thrown right into the mix and join the rest of the team in the offseason program. Whereas in previous years, normally they had a week or two to get acclimated, and then they would join forces with the team. This year, it's a little bit different. Also, keep in mind the Giants are going to get training camp started much earlier than any other team because they get the additional preseason game. They're playing five preseason games, and that first game will be August 3rd, the Hall of Fame game in Canton, Ohio, against the Buffalo Bills. So it really is baptism by fire this year for not just Giants rookies, but rookies across the board, given that there's not a great deal of flexibility in the schedule. So last week, obviously, we discussed in great detail the Giants' first-round pick, Odell Beckham Jr., who they took with the 12th overall selection, the LSU wide receiver who has had experience playing in the slot, playing on the outside, not the tallest wideout, but he makes up for perhaps his lack of height with his aggressiveness and his ability to really go towards the football, and his numbers showcase that. He also was a big key contributor on special teams, specifically via returns, second in the nation with 2,315 all-purpose yards, and he also set a single-season record at LSU. In round two, with the 43rd overall pick, they took Weston Richburg, the Colorado State center, 6'3", 298. A team captain of Colorado State, did not miss a game during his career, 50 consecutive starts, has extremely long arms, the ability to pull, a lot of versatility. He could play guard, he could also play center, and Tom Coughlin even emphasized the fact that he broke his snapping hand as a sophomore in 2011, still continued to play as a left tackle and a right guard. So toughness is certainly not anything that you need to question when it comes to Weston Richburg. And obviously, he did a real good job anchoring that Colorado State offensive line. That unit only gave up 22 sacks in 2013. And clearly, the Giants are looking to improve in that department, considering Eli was sacked 39 times in 2013. In round three, they took Jay Bromley, the Syracuse defensive tackle, 6'3", 306. Also a senior and a team captain of the Orange, has connections to the Giants roster with Justin Pugh and Ryan Nassib being selected last year, has a knack for getting to the quarterback, specifically as a senior. He had 10 sacks in 2013, 13 in his career. So 10 of them came via his senior campaign, and he's a local product because he grew up in Jamaica, New York, and Queens. So getting acclimated to the New York, New Jersey area should not be a problem. And Bromley is going to add depth to a defensive tackle unit that obviously lost Linval Joseph and doesn't really have a great deal of players locked in under contract moving forward. Remember, when you're in on a rookie contract, you're solid for 4 years. So this is going to add some youth. They have Mike Patterson. They have Cullen Jenkins, who could play inside, outside. But this gives them another young body with the likes of Jonathan Hankins, who they brought in last season. In round four, the 113th overall pick, this to me was by far their best value pick. They took Andre Williams, the Boston College running back, 5'11", 230, also a senior. He jumps off the page because he was a Heisman Trophy finalist, led the NCAA in rushing with 2,177 yards. That was also an ACC record. He compiled 18 touchdowns. The numbers jump off the page in terms of his regular season portfolio. 9 100-yard games, 5 200-yard games, and an ACC record 339 yards in a game against NC State. So compiling yards is not a problem for him, and he was able to absorb a huge workload. Had 355 carries this past season. Now, he's not a receiver. He only had 10 receptions over the course of his career, none in 2013. But he's a power back, and he was asked to pass protect at Boston College. And he was asked heavily about this by the press and said he has no problem coming in and getting down and dirty as an offensive lineman, as an additional guy to protect Eli Manning. Is there always room for improvement for these young running backs? Absolutely. But to me, a running back that was not asked to go out and catch passes means that, obviously, based on the number of carries, he was asked pretty much to take the handoffs and run. But also, given that he was in so much, even on passing downs, he obviously was faced with numerous opportunities to pass protect. So that's a positive compared to some of the other running backs that the Giants have brought in previous years. Now, a lot of people have raised concern over his workload. Now, keep this in mind. 355 carries in 2013. However, he had a total of 349 carries over the first three seasons. So he literally matched his three-year workload in 2013 alone. It's not as if he was having 300-plus carries each and every season during the course of his four-year career. Round five, they had two selections. With the 152nd overall pick, they took Nat Burhe, the San Diego State safety. Now, what's interesting about him, 5'10", 193, not huge size. However, what I loved about some of his commentary to the press, he was very quick to say, you question my size? Well, there's a guy named Earl Thomas who plays for the Seattle Seahawks, and the last time I checked, he was also 5'10". So he knows about other safeties in this league. And similar to Odell Beckham Jr., what he lacks in size makes up with hustle, determination, passion. Led San Diego State in tackles each of the last 2 years. To me, what's very interesting about him is that he played a hybrid position at San Diego State. He was a linebacker slash safety slash corner. And when Mark Ross was addressing the media, the best comparison would be a guy like Deion Grant, who, if you recall, in the Giants' defensive schemes, was that third safety, usually came down in the box, served as a linebacker, played in the slot. So this is a versatile player that has really had experience playing just about everywhere on defense. And he was a special teams player as a freshman and a sophomore, not so much as a junior and a senior. With the 174th overall pick, also in round five, they took Devon Kennard, the USC linebacker, 6'3", 249, also a team captain and a senior. A lot of seniors they took, and five of their seven picks were team captains. Like Burhe, he has experience playing multiple positions. Linebacker, defensive end, he's been in a 4-3 scheme, he's been in a 3-4 scheme. He was with two different coaching staffs at USC. He had the Lane Kiffin tenure, followed by the new coaching staff that came in after that. So, you know, he's really been mixed and matched. He's got a good pedigree. He's the son of Derek Kennard, who played 11 years in the NFL, was an offensive lineman with the Cardinals, Saints, and Cowboys from 1986 to 1996. The one red flag, if you're to raise anything, is he's got quite a track record of injuries. Whether it be torn ACLs, he's had surgery on his left thumb, he missed time due to a right pectoral muscle tear. So, obviously, he's dealt with his fair share of injuries, but with the exception of missing 2012, he really has pretty much bounced back rather quickly from these injuries. The final pick, round six, 187th selection, was Bennett Jackson, the Notre Dame corner, 6 feet tall, 195, also a senior and a team captain, started off as a wide receiver as a freshman, then transitioned to corner, and also excelled on special teams. 5 tackles for a loss last season, 2 interceptions, one of which he returned 34 yards for a touchdown. He also had a fumble recovery, and he returned kickoffs. And in terms of his toughness, he played the entire 2012 season with a torn right labrum. And he also ran track at Notre Dame. So a lot of versatile players that the Giants were able to select. Clearly, they spread the wealth. They didn't necessarily focus on one position. Now, I know the one position that I'm sure we're going to get plenty of phone calls on is going to be tight end, because everybody heading to this draft seemed to pinpoint that that was an area where they weren't necessarily extremely strong in the depth chart. But as I raised on Friday when John and I hosted, and I'll continue to emphasize this, the Giants have a track record of developing the internal depth chart, meaning they'll go with what they have and they have faith in the coaching staff. And that was proven with Kevin Boss and Jake Ballard. Does that mean that one of the guys currently on the roster is going to pan out? No, that doesn't mean it's a guarantee. However, with undrafted free agency and any free agents that have been in the league, they still have options. They have room to round out the roster. Remember, you can have up to 90 guys on the roster. So they still have flexibility and room to work with. But, you know, to read into the fact that they didn't draft a tight end, the one thing that Tom Coughlin and Jerry Reese brought up, despite what many thought when you broke down the tight end class, even after Eric Ebron, there was some depth, you know, they weren't that impressed with the tight end class. And they said that time and time again. So, you know, just because an expert has some guy ranked this way doesn't mean that the Giants on their draft board had these guys ranked extremely high. So that's pretty much the layout of the land. We'll obviously open up the lines moving forward here. 201-939-4513. 201-939-4513. Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. And you can follow and interact with me directly at Lance Meadow. One word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. All right, let's head to the lines. We start with AJ in South Carolina. AJ, what's happening?
Good morning, Lance. I got three quick questions for you.
Sure, what you got?
I'm glad the Giants got Isaiah Williams. Do you think he'd be the backup to Rashawn Jennings if Dave Wilson's not healthy?
You talk about the backup to Rashawn Jennings? Yeah, I think he has a shot to play an integral role from the start, not a guy that they just brought in so that they could keep on the sideline. However, I think a lot is going to be determined based on David Wilson's health, which is clearly a question mark still, and even Jerry Reese brought that up. He has yet to be cleared for contact. So, you know, right now his status is up in the air, but they have every hope that he will be in the mix. And then after that, you have Michael Cox, you have Peyton Hillis. So I think given the fact that Andre Williams has had a big workload in college, he's a power back, he could be a goal line guy, if David Wilson is not 100%, they're not ready to fully take on a big load, I think Andre Williams has a real good shot to come in and make an impact. In terms of will he be two, will he be three, I mean, that to me is semantics. I think the bottom line is there's an opportunity as a young guy this year, more so than any other year, AJ, to come in, get carries, and produce, whereas in previous years they've really had a nucleus of veterans that they were leaning on, such as an Ahmad Bradshaw or somebody else. That's not necessarily the case this year.
Second question, when they come do an announcement for the other rookies? Like,
in terms of guys that were undrafted that they may sign?
Yeah.
Well, they have to wait for these players to go through physicals and anything else that they need to take care of before they can officially make signings. So we may not hear an announcement perhaps until another day or two, depending on how quickly the process goes. But I know you and probably many of our listeners have read speculation online. It's impossible to comment at this point because nothing's official right now. It's all speculation.
Last question is, who the Giants draft rookie free agent so far?
In terms of info on the current guys you're talking about?
Yeah.
Well, you could get any intel on Giants.com. Our entire staff did a real nice job with all different features. I would definitely peruse the site. There's a lot of articles. There's videos. I mean, you'll learn just about anything you want about all of the Giants rookies and where they fit in within the scheme. So, I mean, I would stay locked to our team website better than any other outlet, at least at this point.
I noticed the defensive tackle of South Carolina. The undrafted.
Well, right. Yeah, I mean, I know who you're talking about, and I believe you're referring to Quarles. Unfortunately, I've read the speculation, AJ, but I can't comment officially on anything because the Giants haven't made an announcement.
Okay. Thanks for taking my call.
Not a problem, AJ. Appreciate you weighing in. That is AJ out of South Carolina. And once again, just to emphasize, I know a lot of you are perusing the web, and myself included. I've read the reports. I've seen the tweets. You guys and gals do a lot of great homework. I'm not denying you that. But, I mean, for me to really get into a heart-to-heart discussion about these guys and where they may fit in within the Giants scheme would be extremely premature because nothing's official at this point. And the Giants, to give you a timetable, would be, you know, right now difficult. I think that within the next day or two, they'll finalize contracts, they'll take physicals, and then the Giants will have a full press release where they'll be willing to announce who will be rounding out the roster. But right now, the main focus is on the exact draft picks that they have. I can get into all the ins and outs regarding their history and where they fit in. And certainly, if you can't phone in, feel free to chime in on the conversation via Twitter, at Lance Meadow, one word, last name, M-E-D-O-W, and you can use hashtag Giants Chat. Let's try to go to a tweet or two before we head to the lines. Always nice to balance out our interaction here. H. Carson Fan at Night Moves NJ says, can't remember the G-Men ever having so many quality return men on one team. Well said. Can't argue with that. Between the free agents that they brought in, and now the majority of the rookies have had special teams experience. And in my open, I pretty much went over that. But just to reemphasize, Odell Beckham Jr., he was a returner. Then you look at what some of the other guys brought to the table. Berhe, as a freshman and a sophomore, played special teams. And then Bennett Jackson was also a return guy, the Notre Dame corner. So you're talking about three players with extensive special teams work. It's not as if, you know, they went out there and played three downs over the course of their career. We're talking about consistently during the course of their career. And then you look at the Giants roster, and remember, each and every season, it felt the only guy that we would talk about would be Dominic Hixon. Dominic Hixon goes down, it's like, uh-oh, who are the Giants going to turn to? That is certainly not the case. And Tom Coughlin even alluded to this, and even Jerry Reese. Competition is never a bad thing. If you can have five or six guys that have the ability to return, hey, let the competition play itself out in camp. And then you can have defined roles after you see these players grind it out during training camp and during the five preseason games. I think they were extremely aggressive bringing in players this free agency that were versatile. Trindon Holiday probably is one of the first guys that comes to mind after what he was able to do with the Denver Broncos. Reuben Randall, keep in mind, has special teams experience. Jarrell Jernigan has special teams experience. But if they have a more prominent role as a wide receiver, how much do you want to expose them on special teams? You also have to keep that in mind. Quinton Demps, the safety from the Kansas City Chiefs, he also has special teams experience. So there are a number of players that are not necessarily wide receivers or secondary players, but players that also can mix it up in special teams. And Jayron Hosley would be another guy I would throw out there, as well as David Wilson, assuming he is healthy. And you know, as H. Carson wrote in, it is very good to have options, but I can't remember the last time where they had this much depth. So that is certainly something to take note moving forward. 201-939-4513. Let's head back to the lines. We got Micah in Tennessee. Micah, welcome to the program. What you got?
Hey, how you doing, Lance?
Doing very well, Micah.
I just want to say thank you for doing this every morning. I really appreciate it, man.
Not a problem. Listen, it's great to interact with the fans, and it's also a pleasure to not have John Schmoke here once in a while. So I can't complain about that. So what do you have for us, Mike?
Well, I just wanted to say Emmanuel Dikey, Charlie was right about that. He talked about him a few weeks ago. But that's not all I want to talk about. I'm actually extremely excited to have Andre Williams and a little bit of a surprise that we didn't get Troy Nicholas.
Well, I know that he was a name that was thrown out, and there were a number of other tight ends right behind Derek Ebron that you would have said, hey, you know, they have the dynamics that they could bring something to the table. But I get back to what Tom Coughlin and Jerry Reese mentioned, Mike, and it didn't seem, based on their scouting department and based on their grades, they were not very high on a lot of the tight ends that were in this class compared to what the depth chart presented in previous years. So, you know, you and I may have one opinion on a guy, but, you know, they did their homework. It's not as if they overlooked the tight end spot, and they just didn't seem as if anybody would be an ideal fit or worth taking earlier in the draft. So, as a result, they'll look at some undrafted options, and perhaps they'll take a chance on a free agent that has yet to sign with a team.
So what do you think they'll do at tight end? I mean, do you think they'll stick with what they have, or do you think they'll go into the free agency?
I think they'll explore an undrafted free agent, a rookie, more so than maybe a free agent that's a veteran presence. I know JerMichael Finley's name, Micah, has been thrown out quite often because of his ties to Ben McAdoo with the Packers, but Finley has yet to get cleared for anything, so it'd be extremely premature to throw his name out. I have emphasized this throughout the course of this offseason. I'm going to stand by it. I think the Giants feel they have a few potential candidates in the mix currently on the roster. And I understand that Giants fans grow impatient with a guy like Adrian Robinson. You know, it's been 3 years. He's been injury prone, but I think they're willing to give him another shot considering his size and perhaps what he can do to pose a challenge for defenses. Larry Dinnell is another name. If you recall, we were talking about Larry Dinnell a lot in training camp last year. He had a great training camp. Problem was he also got hurt and a lot of guys were ahead of him in the depth chart. So that, you know, hurt him in terms of his development. Daniel Fells is a veteran guy. He's been around the block. And Kellen Davis, to me, is the true definition of a tight end, what the Giants are looking for, Micah, because he is a blocker first before he goes out there and catches passes. And he's coming over from a Seattle Seahawks team, which clearly knows how to win. So I think that they're comfortable with the mix they have, but that does not mean that this is going to be the tight end they turn to. But they have a track record of developing guys, and I think they're going to give these guys a chance first before they start exploring other options.
Okay, thank you.
You got it, Mike. I'd appreciate the phone call. 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter at Lance Meadow. One word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. Let's take a look at some of the other tweets here. Mike Farmer at mfarmer20. Is there any chance with the pickup of Williams, the Boston College running back, that if Wilson is healthy, he returns kicks again, or is that over? I would think, given Wilson's track record with the injury bug and a number of other options that they have on special teams, Mike, I'd be very surprised if they immediately threw David Wilson back into the mix on special teams. I think that they'd want to preserve him as a running back. If they didn't have as many options as I just went over, that H. Carson fan threw out, I would say, okay, maybe there's a little bit more pressure to get Wilson back in the fold, but considering you have corners, wide receivers, and safeties that have experience returning punts and kickoffs, I mean, what would be the rationale in throwing Wilson out there? And I understand, but, you know, Wilson's got a good track record. He's deadly in terms of his returning game. I buy that, but Trendon Holiday is too. Quinton Demps is too. Some of these other wide receivers too. You know, they have the ability to turn the corner and take it to the house. So it's not as if Wilson is the only explosive return guy on the roster right now. Let's head back to the lines, and let's go to Timothy in New Jersey. Timothy, what's happening?
Hi, I got a question for you.
Sure, what you got, Tim?
The Giants, will Odell Beckham Jr. look to make impact as the number one receiver?
Well, Timothy, I appreciate the phone call. I think that he'll have an opportunity. I don't know if I'll have an opportunity to necessarily be the number one receiver because Victor Cruz right now is going to be the go-to target, and I think he and Eli Manning have built a tremendous amount of chemistry. I think he, though, has an opportunity to fight for the two spot and fight for the three spot. And as we emphasized last week, in Ben McAdoo's system, where I believe they're going to probably have a lot of three wide receiver sets, it really makes no difference who's two and three on the depth chart. Once again, it's all semantics. But Odell Beckham Jr. with the 12th overall pick, it's not the type of guy that they selected and they said, eh, sure, we're going to have him develop over the course of the first season. No, they're going to have him come in, make an impact, and play. And he showed that with his time at LSU. Now, this is a player that many would say may not be the tallest guy, but probably one of the most polished wide receivers in the draft, meaning the closest to be ready to step in and immediately make an impact. I think he'll have a great opportunity to test Reuben Randall, put additional pressure on Jarrell Jernigan. So there's going to be competition there. But to say that he's going to be the number one guy, the go-to guy, I don't see him necessarily taking over the reins from Victor Cruz. But in Ben McAdoo's system, assuming he takes some wrinkles from the Packers system, they're going to spread the wealth. Because the goal is to not have Eli Manning hold the ball and, you know, put him out there where all of a sudden there could be potential breakdowns with the offensive line and he's going to be pressured again. They want to get rid of that football. So the more wide receivers you have out there, the more options that Eli Manning is going to have to turn to. And I think Beckham is going to be right in the mix there. And considering they lost Akeem Nicks and considering they lost some of the other guys that they had last year on the roster to free agency, there is an opportunity. It's not as if Odell Beckham is competing with, you know, five individuals that are ahead of him. I understand they brought Mario Manningham back, but, you know, Manningham is coming off an injury-plagued season. So there's no guarantees with respect to him. He's definitely going to have an opportunity, whether it be on special teams, whether it be as the number two or number three wide receiver, to come in and make plays. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Gary in Florida. Gary, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing, Lance?
Doing well, Gary. How about yourself? What you got?
All right. I just got some I think we did a great job in the draft. I think Jerry Reese, I mean, I think they followed their board to the T. And when it comes to the tight ends, I don't know if you was watching like I was, but it felt like all the tight ends, the good ones, were coming off the board early in the second round. Two of them, Nicholas and the guy from Washington, got off right away. So I want to say even in the third round, the guy from Iowa came off with the first pick to the Texans. So I want to say it just didn't fall to us. I think we rolled the dice hoping that one of them would be there, but it just didn't fall to us. That's why I see it with the tight end position as far as the draft.
Well, Gary, just real quickly to piggyback off of what you said, I'll let you continue. Didn't mean to interrupt you. I just think that Giants weren't in the position where they wanted to reach for a guy, which is what you sort of alluded to. I think that they may have had one or two guys on the list behind Derek Ebron, but they said to themselves, you know, we're not going to go out of our way to just grab him just for the sake of grabbing somebody because we need an extra tight end. If somebody would have fell and would have been one of the highest guys on the draft board and would have been a good value pick, I think, yes, they probably would have went out and got them, but nobody fell into that region. So they said to themselves, you know what? We're content with what we have as opposed to just taking an extra body.
No, I agree with you. And then on the Odell Beckham pick, I think this helps us in so many ways. But I think the biggest way it's going to help us, I think it's going to motivate Reuben Randle to step his game up. That's what I feel. I mean, I wonder how he feels that we had to pick a wide receiver in the first round. And it's somebody from LSU, so I want to say the competition is going to be great at the wide receiver court this year.
Well, and I think it'll be great in even other positions. The wide receiver is one to highlight, but as I mentioned, I think they now have some additional depth at corner and safety. There's going to be competition for who's going to return punts and kickoffs, which is something that they really never had the luxury to throw out there in years. So competition's never a bad thing, but to get back to your Reuben Randle point, you're right. To bring in a guy who was a former teammate of yours in college, he's the 12th overall pick. Yes, that is a message that this offense needs some new life, and that means that nobody's job is safe. And nobody, after a season where you went 7-9 and you had breakdowns on offense, should feel safe. I think that there should be pressure and urgency all around.
Lance, my last thing, I just want to hear your answer off air. I give this draft a B. I just want to know what's your grade on the draft. Thank you for all you do.
You got it, Gary. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. It's hard to draft to a great drafts, excuse me, mainly because, you know, these guys have really yet to step on the football field and we have yet to see how they're going to fit into the system. But with that being said, to answer Gary's point, you know, when you look at a few things, the first thing that jumps off the page is, as I mentioned, to grab a guy like Andre Williams in the fourth round, that is great value. You know, when's the last time you heard of a Heisman Trophy finalist falling in at the fourth round, who is also a guy that can come in and make an impact? Because running back was, to me, an area of need, given the fact that Rashad Jennings is really the one guy that you feel good about that could carry the load, and David Wilson is a question mark. So I think that they certainly get a check mark for that. I like the Weston Richburg pick, and we were talking about this on Friday, that if there was a position that I would go in round two, it would be offensive line, and if I was to rank center and guard, I said I'd take a center because the veterans that they had right now on the roster have some injury concerns. So I personally like that move a lot. Odell Beckham Jr. could turn out to be the steal of the wide receiver corps, despite how many accolades Sammy Watkins and Mike Evans had, because Beckham, in terms of his route running, is extremely polished and is versatile because he can go out there and contribute on special teams. So with those three picks when you take those into consideration, I think it's fair to throw out the letter that Gary threw out there. I think in the range of a B is a fair grade. But right now, I think it's extremely too early to speculate because we really have to see what these guys can do on the playing field and where exactly they fit into the Giants system, because you have a lot of versatile players that were selected, which is a positive. It always helps to have players that you can move and mix and match, and also ones that who may not have a starting job right away can at least make an impact on special teams. And keep this in mind. When you're the fourth, fifth corner on the roster, when you're that borderline 54th, 55th player fighting for the last two or three spots, the area that separates you from the rest of the pack is if you can play special teams. So it's extremely important that a number of these rookies have had special teams experience, and the scouting department and the coaching staff will tell you if they can't get out on the field via their position, they're going to have to make some headway as a special teams player. So that is certainly something to keep in consideration. All right, we're going to get to more of your phone calls momentarily, but first we welcome into our normal Monday spot Eric Kennedy, who is the owner of Big Blue Interactive, one of the best Giants fan sites out there. So we welcome in Eric Kennedy to the program here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Eric, Lance Meadow with you. Thanks for joining us. How's everything?
Great, great. It's basically, I think, Christmas morning for most Giants fans with the draft picks. So they're unwrapping their presents and evaluating what they got.
Absolutely. And speaking of that, since you have seen already a great deal of feedback from the fans, what are the message boards saying? A fan just called up and asked me for a grade. I'm curious what some of the other fans have been weighing in with respect to these new gifts that they've been able to unwrap.
Well, you get the same type of reaction every year. You're going to get fans that hate the picks, you're going to get fans that love the picks, and you're going to get everything in between. And it really ultimately comes down to, you know, right or wrong, I hate to say it, it comes down to a fan recognition of the names. If there are names that were discussed that they knew that who these guys were going into the draft, and there was speculation that the Giants might look at these guys, they're happy with those picks. If there's somebody, some name that comes up that they're not familiar with, automatically, or a position, they're automatically going to be critical. And so there are a lot of people, for instance, that didn't like the third round pick, Bromley, because they never heard of the guy, or they didn't, or he was supposed to, you know, according to the draft Knicks, was supposed to go in the fourth, fifth, or sixth round. So that criticism's out there. Or there are other people, instead of a wide receiver in the first round, they thought they should have taken an offensive lineman or a tight end. You're going to get criticism there. But I think for the most part, I'm sure we'll discuss these picks, but for the most part, I think fans are mostly pleased, other than the fact that there still is concern out there about the offensive line. I think people thought they might look. Yeah, I think the center was fairly highly graded, and a lot of people like the guy. They're still concerned at the tackle position, whether or not Will Beattie's going to hold up there, and do they have enough players there to deal with that position as they move forward.
Well, speaking of the offensive line, and I understand that a number of fans thought that maybe in round one they would take Zach Martin out of Notre Dame, who eventually went to the Dallas Cowboys, but the center that you just alluded to, Weston Richburg, in round two, you know, that was an area, at least before the draft, Eric, where you look at the veterans that they brought in, J.D. Walton, injury history, only played four games over the course of the last two seasons, and Dallas Reynolds, who's been a veteran who came over from the Eagles, you know, not a great deal of depth. So if anything, I would think in round two, given his grade and given the need, it adds up that over tackle and over guard, you know, center was certainly an area that they needed to beef up here.
Yeah, the three guys that got the least amount of criticism were Beckham, Richburg, the center, and I would say Andre Williams, the running back, because I think those who follow the draft and follow college football saw the talent there. And Richburg, there was very little disagreement that I saw with that pick. A lot of people thought that was a very good pick. You know, I don't want to speak for everyone, because there are people that didn't like the selection, that thought we should go tight end there. But I don't think anyone saw that pick and said, whoa, they really reached, because he played fairly well in the All-Star games. He's fairly highly rated. He's a throwback type of player. He's got ability. So I think most people are happy with that pick. And as you mentioned, with J.D. Walton, he hasn't played in a couple of years, and Dallas Reynolds is a journeyman. He's actually the guy, I believe, that got beat on the play that Eli Manning got injured on. So there was a need at center, and I think most fans are fairly comfortable with that pick.
Eric, you mentioned tight end, and that was a big topic of discussion heading into the draft. There was a lot of speculation that perhaps Eric Ebron out of North Carolina would fall to the Giants at 12. From what Tom Coughlin and Jerry Reese said, it seemed as if they did not have this tight end class drafted very high. But with that being said, how surprised were you that they did not ultimately take a tight end in this draft?
Well, you know what I saw this morning, which I thought was fascinating, is they said on the NFL Network that only 10 tight ends were taken in this draft. 10. I mean, that's astounding. And that gets to what Tom Coughlin was talking about right after the draft, where he said, where are these guys? Where are the tight ends? He said he went to the combine, and it was the smallest group there. And then that's sort of backed up by the fact that there were only 10 picks in the draft for tight ends. So I am a little bit surprised, but I personally wasn't thrilled with the quality of the guys that were in this draft. There were a few names that were thrown around, and as Jerry Reese likes to use the word warts, each of them had warts with them. So I think I wasn't overly surprised given who was available at each pick. I thought if they were going to do something, it would be in the second and the third round. And I think that one spot that I think – again, it gets back to the Bromley pick. I think that surprised people, where everyone thought, well, here we're going to take a tight end. But again, it wasn't just the Giants. It was the entire league. If you've got 32 teams, there's seven rounds and even more picks because of all the comp picks, and only 10 tight ends were taken, that tells you something about the overall draft class. Now, it's reported that the Giants signed Xavier Grimble out of USC, and he's a fairly good pickup in the undrafted rookie free agent market if they actually signed him. He's a guy that some thought might be a late-round draft pick, so he might be a little bit of a steal for them as well, too.
And he also has a tremendous amount of size. He's 6'4", so that would obviously give Eli Manning a bigger target if ultimately the Giants do wind up signing him. Nothing is official at this point. Now, I've been saying this for weeks, Eric, and I'm curious your thoughts. Based on the Giants' track record, sticking with the tight end subject, you know, they've had the ability to develop a lot of their internal options, or a lot of guys who I call unknown commodities, such as a Kevin Boss or a Jake Ballard. And, you know, these guys that they have on the roster don't necessarily jump off the page. Adrian Robinson is a player that they've been preaching patience, but, you know, he's been plagued by injuries. Do you see somebody on this roster that a Ben McAdoo can perhaps really groom, given what he was able to work with within the Packers organization?
Yeah, I've gotten a lot of criticism on my own site about this, but I think that Adrian Robinson and Larry Donnell still have a lot of talent. They're both 270, 275-pound players that have a lot of athletic ability. Adrian Robinson's biggest problem is he just can't stay on the field. If he can stay on the field, this time last year when they were in the OTAs, Mike Pope was talking about the fact that Adrian had made a lot of progress. Now, I don't know if that progress disappeared in training camp or not, but I know he got into the preseason and he got injured right away on a kickoff. And then he was basically lost for the rest of the year until he got back late in the year, and then he got hurt on the opening kickoff again of a game. So, again, sometimes this is just freak stuff. We've seen this stuff before, like even with Phil Simms, if you want to go way back, where some guys aren't injury you don't know if a guy's injury prone or if it's just bad luck. But he has a lot of talent. Larry Donnell has a lot of talent. So I think there's something to work with there. I think the coaches are probably, my guess is the coaches are more nervous about this than Jerry Reese, because it's their neck that's on the line. I wouldn't still be shocked if they still picked up somebody like JerMichael Finley if he passes his physical later in the off season here. And the one big question, you know, we still have out there is we don't really know what this new offense is going to look like. The thought is it's a Green Bay West Coast offense, therefore the tight end's got to be a huge part of this. But maybe Ben McAdoo looks at this and says, I've got a great slot receiver in Victor Cruz. I've got another slot-like guy now with the high round draft pick that they just got in Beckham. They've got another slot guy with a guy like Jernigan. So maybe they even go more 3-4 wide receiver looks, and the tight end gets de-emphasized. We don't know what they're going to do offensively until they obviously don't want to show their cards to the rest of the league. But Ben McAdoo may be one of these guys that says, "Hey, I'm not crazy about the tight ends, but I like our wide receivers. Maybe we're going to de-emphasize the tight end." So we'll have to see. I have a hard time seeing Coughlin doing that, but I don't know what Ben McAdoo wants to do.
And certainly there could be ample opportunity to even have a bigger role for the running backs in the passing game, which is something that they've struggled with, specifically when it comes to a screen pass. But we can have an entire show on that topic. We don't necessarily have to bring that up right now. Speaking of running backs, you mentioned they took Andre Williams out of Boston College in round 4. To me, it's the best value pick, considering he was a Heisman Trophy finalist and had a great deal of experience in terms of carries. A number of fans have raised this question about, you know, normally rookies don't really come in and automatically make a big impact, specifically at the running back spot, maybe with the exception of David Wilson. You know, how do you see him automatically coming in? Because with Wilson being hurt and Rashad Jennings the only versatile back, at least at this point, I would think he could make a big impact early on, Eric.
Yeah, I do too. It depends, obviously, on the pass protection. When it comes down to rookie running backs, it's all about pass pro. If they can protect the quarterback, they'll play. If they can't protect the quarterback, they're going to sit. So he's a big guy. There were question marks in scouting reports about his pass protection, but that's usually the case of most rookie running backs. He was asked about it on his conference call, and he said it's not a problem for him. I mean, obviously, they're just going to have to see on the field. If he can pass block, he'll play. I really like Rashad Jennings, so I think he's going to play a lot, and I would pencil him in as the starter. But Andre Williams is a really, really good player, and he could be the guy for years to come once he's developed. You just never know with rookies. I never really like to count on rookies, but a lot of it depends obviously on David Wilson. If David Wilson's neck issue is still out there, then Williams is automatically going to be bumped up the depth chart. If David Wilson can play, you kind of like to have the quicker, more explosive guy to combine with Jennings as the power back. Now, the real nice thing about Andre Williams is this: he's a really good short yardage runner. So, as is Jennings. So, if they can get the line resolved, the Giants' short yardage woes, I think, and goal line stuff should look a lot better than it has in recent years, because we have two running backs right now that are really good in short yardage.
Talking with Eric Kennedy, the owner of Big Blue Interactive, one of the best Giants fan sites out there. Eric, before I let you go, real quickly, they took two guys in round 5 and one in round 6. The two in round 5, Nad Burhe, the safety out of San Diego State, also Devon Kennard, the USC linebacker, and Bennett Jackson, the Notre Dame corner, was the 6th-round selection. What has been the feedback about those 3 late-round picks, and who do you maybe see as a sleeper that could come in and surprise a few here?
Well, you know, it's always funny, and I sort of issued a warning before we got into those picks on the website. I said, every year, guys, they pick somebody, and this is true of any team, they pick somebody late, you've never heard of their names, and you all freak out about this. I said, it happened even with Jaquan Williams, Ahmad Bradshaw, so I warned guys about that. And, you know, the reaction with Burhe was the same until people, you know, they pulled up the YouTube highlights and saw that this guy was a heat-seeking missile. Heard him interviewed and saw some cut-ups on, again, some cut-ups from games that he played in that are on YouTube. I think Burhe has a chance to be a fan favorite out there because he's undersized, but he hits like a ton of bricks. He's always around the football. And I think Giants fans are going to love his attitude, and he should really do well on special teams. So I think of the one guy I think he fits in. I think he might be insurance for Will Hill because he plays that similar type of style and role in the 3 safety look. So I think that's a guy that might have the most impact of the late round picks early. The corner that they took late from Notre Dame, he's a very interesting guy, but he looks like a developmental type of guy. And, they've got a numbers issue right now at cornerback. They've got a lot of good corners on this team right now. And, you know, I think he's going to be hard-pressed to make the squad. I think it's going to be best for a practice squad developmental type of year for him unless he really comes on. Now, Devon Kennard, he's an interesting guy in the sense that he's a big, he's another one of these big linebacker tweeners that the Giants tend to like the when they switched Kiwanuka between defensive line and linebacker back and forth. They sort of did that a little bit with Clint Sintem. He's that kind of guy that he's sort of in between a defensive end and the linebacker. The thing that stood out to me about the comments after the draft was that Coughlin and Reese were both talking about how smart this guy was, that he came in and I guess he met with the Giants before the draft, and they were so impressed with him in terms of his mental makeup and understanding what the Giants do defensively and what he could bring to the team. So I think he's a very interesting guy. The question to me with him is going to be this, is whenever you have these tweeners, is he going to be athletic enough to play the linebacker position? Because he's big enough, and he sounds like he's smart enough. He's a big physical guy. The question is can he drop back into coverage? Is he a guy that can run sideline to sideline? We'll have to see. But he was very productive at a big-time program at USC. So I think for a late-round pick, you know, he's a very solid selection.
And I think the other question regarding him is whether or not he can stay healthy given his track record with the injury bug. But certainly it does speak volumes of his ability, the fact that they were impressed with his interview and the fact that he understands concepts and schemes. And I guess a big part of that is the fact that he's a son of a former NFL player. So that certainly can't hurt. Eric Kennedy, the owner of Big Blue Interactive, one of the best Giants fan sites out there. Eric, really appreciate the time and the insights this morning. Look forward to chatting with you in the future.
Thanks again.
You
Thank
got
you.
It. Eric Kennedy of BigBlueInteractive.com, kind enough to give us a few minutes here this morning on Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. Lance Meadow with you. We'll head back to the lines, get some feedback from Big Blue Nation. You could also chime in on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat, at Lance Meadow, one word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. Let's head back to the lines. I know a number of you have been waiting patiently, and a morning would never be complete unless we hear from Jeff in Rhode Island. Jeff, what's happening?
Wow, that's quite an intro, buddy.
Well, we try to spice things up. We try to build it up. Plus, I still am patting you on the back for that jab and that zinger at John Schmelk on Friday.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
To me, is one of the best of all time.
I'm glad that you enjoyed it. But I must tell you that I called him back the following day, and I had to make up for it a little bit. So
oh, you're killing me, Jeff. Come
yeah,
on.
Yeah, I know.
You know,
no, don't worry.
You can't
soften
on me like that. Come on.
Yeah, I know. I got other things coming, so don't worry about it.
All right, good. I'm glad you have more material.
Anyways, yeah, I was pleased with the Giants draft overall. I think, they addressed the holes that needed to be filled, and they got value as well, which is, you know, important. The thing I was wondering was I thought maybe the number three pick might have been a little bit of a reach, a defensive tackle. I don't know. How did you feel about that?
Well, Eric Kennedy just mentioned that, too, the Syracuse defensive tackle you're alluding to, Jay Bromley. And I understand, based on what some of the other scouts and experts said, he wasn't necessarily projected to go this high. Bromley will be the first one to tell you, Jeff, when he was interviewed by the media, he said, I was expecting to get a call on Saturday because he was expecting to go figure the fourth or the fifth round. So he was even caught off guard. The fact that he's a local product, you know, maybe makes up for that because he's familiar with the the situation here. He grew up as a Giants fan. I mean, listen, you can read into this each and every way. They need depth at defensive tackle. You know, is he the best defensive tackle out there? I'm not going to stretch it and say that. But I think that he has shown during the course of his career, specifically this past year, he can get to the quarterback. And he can get to the quarterback out of the defensive tackle spot. And that's not something that even most polished defensive tackles have had a great deal of success doing that. So if you could bring in a guy that's got some maneuvers and you line him up next to the JPPs and the Cullen Jenkins of the world, you know, perhaps that he could provide an extra boost. I think that they probably look at him at worst as a rotational guy and a guy that they can use to develop this season and that they can push him in there in case somebody else goes down. But, you know, I wouldn't even put him in front of some of the other players that they have. I think right now Jonathan Hankins is penciled in as a legitimate starter, as well as Cullen Jenkins, before necessarily you turn to some of the other guys, such as a Jay Bromley.
Right. Okay, so we'll figure he'll just be a rotational player. Two other things quickly. I really, really like the selection of the running back from BC. I was really quite pleased the Giants took him. I was really hoping that they'd draft him. And do you see the size of his thighs?
He's a big guy down low. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, he's not quite as big as Campbell was with the Houston Oilers. But either he has huge thigh pads or he's got huge thighs. So I think that's a really good thing.
Well, anybody, Jeff, who had 355 carries understands what it takes to absorb a few hits. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he's going to be a really good player for us. And number three, I was just curious as to what will they actually be doing on the field this week. I would assume something may begin tomorrow. Or how is that going to work? Or is anything going to happen on the field this
week? You're talking about in terms of the rookies or the entire team?
Well, both. I mean, it's going to be the entire team, right?
Correct. And the rookies are going to be thrown into the mix. I mean, right now it's still that strength and conditioning type of phase, but they will slowly be getting into the mix where they actually, will run plays, go over schemes on the field, and they have yet to have their, full mini camp and other OTAs. But that's coming up because you figure this month and in early June they have those three-day sessions penciled in, and then they're going to have a little time off. And as I mentioned off the top, Jeff, Giants training camp gets started before everybody else because they have the earliest preseason game.
Yeah, that's good. Do you know the exact date on that?
I think training camp, I believe, starts about July 15th, a little bit later than that.
Okay.
So they haven't announced a specific date. I can tell you, obviously, it's going to be here at the Giants facility because they're no longer going to be up in Albany. But they haven't necessarily announced the full one. But if I'm correct, I believe the rule is you can start 15 days before your first preseason game. So August 3rd is the first preseason game. You do the math. That's why I'm saying you figure a little past the 15th mark of July should be when they can get out there.
Okay, that's good. So am I correct in assuming that there won't be any physical contact until training camp, or will there be contact in a mini camp?
Well, they can have a little contact in mini camp. I mean, they're not necessarily hammering one another, but
I mean, it'd be like 7-on-7s and 11-on-11s and that type of thing.
Depending on what the coaching staff wants to run, they certainly have the freedom and the flexibility to do that. It's just during the strength and conditioning phase, they can't go out there, put on the pads, and get out of the field.
Right.
That obviously they're not allowed to do because of the rules and regulations in the CBA.
Okay, Lance, I'll be talking to you soon, buddy. You have a good day.
Sounds good, Jeff. Okay? You too. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number, 201-939-4513. Let's take a look at a few tweets before we head back to the phone lines. A number of you weighing in on that entity. Let's see what we've got here. H. Carson Fan, very active on Twitter. I think concern at left tackle is legitimate. Pass rush is another issue. If either Beattie or JPP get hurt, the Giants are in trouble. Well, getting back to the old Beattie situation, Eric Kennedy raised that concern. There are veterans in camp that they brought in that could play the tackle spot. Specifically, you look at a Charles Brown who came over from the Saints. You know, he's a guy that you probably would pencil in that could be in there in the event that Beattie's not ready. Right now, it's extremely too early to speculate because we have no idea whether or not Beattie is going to be ready. If Beattie's ready for week one, I don't think the concern level is raised. If Beattie's not ready, then it becomes similar to a JPP situation like last year where, you want to have additional insurance. But they brought in a number of veterans who they can turn to. It's not as if they brought these veterans in just for the sake of bringing them in. They brought them in because they want to have extra competition during the course of some of these OTAs, mini camps, and training camps to determine who will indeed be able to utilize as a backup. Then you look at JPP in terms of the depth chart at the defensive line and the pass rush, and they just brought in Kennard, who we were talking about earlier in the program. Devon Kennard, their fifth round pick, is somebody that has had experience at linebacker and defensive end. I think they right now have him penciled in as John Beeson's backup. That does not mean that they can't experiment and utilize him on the line. You have DeMontre Moore, you have Matthias Kiwanuka, you signed Robert Ayers. There are other options, in the event that JPP gets banged up. But, he took care of his business this offseason, and when he returned, he says that he feels probably the best he's felt in about 2 years. So I think there's a great deal of optimism surrounding JPP. But I can understand, given the track record of some of these players, there is a level of concern. But I think during the course of the offseason, specifically free agency, you know, the Giants were aggressive. Could they sign five or six guys at every position? No, because you have a limit in terms of how many guys you can throw out there on your roster. But that doesn't mean that in the draft, you just take a defensive end or a left tackle just for the sake of taking them. It's the same thing that we were talking about a tight end. Yes, there's a need at tight end, but if the tight end is not good value, what's the point of bringing in the tight end? Remember, this is what you have to ask yourself. Even if you're a fan of the team, do you take a guy just for the sake of taking a guy because you have a need, or do you take a guy because he actually can provide service for you and he has value? You know, what's the point of just bringing in a body? They could grab a body anywhere. That's why they could bring in undrafted free agents and perhaps somebody who has yet to sign. If they really needed bodies, that's what they could do. But if you want a player, you don't waste a draft pick because these draft picks are too valuable. And if you need an example to back that up, just look at the Seattle Seahawks and how they've built their team over the last few years. Let's head back to the lines, 201-939-4513. Derek is in Atlanta. Derek, what's happening?
All right, good morning, Lance.
Good morning to you. Derek, what you got?
Hey, so like with the tight ends, I do believe that Jerry Reese has already talked about it. He believes that we have enough tight ends on staff right now to compete for a starting job. With basically, if you're looking at the staying around the same production that we normally get from a tight end, I think if there was a dynamic tight end that fell to us, like C.J. Fedorovich in the third round, which I think he went to the first pick in the third round, I think we probably would have considered him, but he just didn't come there. And then once you get past him, then you're really getting into the people, you know, where you can toss up and, you know, you probably can wait and say, instead of picking these guys and bringing them on staff, I think the people that we already got is already, you know, better than, you know, these people that you can get later on in the draft.
Well, Derek, if you take a tight end, and Fedorovich, you're right, he went in the third round. He was the first pick that went to the Texans, the tight end out of Iowa. You take a tight end in the fourth, fifth, sixth round, you know, you're really going based on potential, and there's no guarantee that they come in and can assume that starting job. So you're right, if you compare them to what you currently have on your roster, you might as well just stick with what you currently have on the roster and try to work these guys out and see if you could develop them and whether or not they're a good fit for Ben McAdoo's system. If you take a tight end of the first or second round, I could understand, okay, maybe they have an edge over the guys you currently have, but there is no significant advantage if you take a flyer on a fifth-round pick or a sixth-round pick because all you're doing is you're just adding to the bulk that you already have, and I would prefer you take the time to develop one of the guys that you already used the draft pick on in a previous year.
And I believe that, you know, Larry Donnell,
yeah.
Yeah, I believe that he showed promise, and I think given opportunity this year and some off season, and he may be able to come in and start, you know. But
opportunity's there, Derek, and Tom Coughlin emphasized this. You know, we could sit here and break down each and every tight end. If I'm Adrian Robinson, if I'm Larry Donnell, you know, I'm licking my chops right now because the Giants didn't draft
Daniel
a tight
Fells
end.
And
correct.
We got and then we also got another tight end that we got off of
Kellen Davis.
Out of Yeah. Okay, so, I mean, how many tight ends do we need, really? I mean, unless you're talking about a dynamic tight end that's just going to catch the balls and not block, I think you have what the Giants tight ends normally look like on staff already. So I don't think that we need to go there. But looking at the third-round pick, Bromley, looking at him, he looks like one of the picks Jerry Reese likes to do where he picks a guy a year ahead if he thinks he's going to be a need the next year. And I think he's thinking of Cullen Jenkins. You know, the guy moves like Cullen Jenkins. So, you know, hopefully by next year he can just, you know, plug him into that spot, you know.
Well, a lot of the guys at that position, which you just alluded to, Derek, and I think it's a great point, are not necessarily under contract long-term. And you're right. At the corner spot when guys are due and their contract is about to expire, they tend to think ahead. For example, Hankins was brought in knowing Linval Joseph was going to be a free agent. And you could say the same thing about protecting yourself with respect to Cullen Jenkins. A number of the guys that they also brought in via free agency or under one-year contract, so they'll have the opportunity to test the market. So just because they may not make an impact this year, you're right, down the road, they could be a guy that all of a sudden is thrown into a starting gig or more of a rotational player that comes in on more downs and can make a name for themselves. I think that that's definitely the philosophy that the Giants have adopted in previous years.
And hey, you tell him to take a seat right next in the meeting rooms, right next to Cullen Jenkins, and you try to suck up everything that guy knows in football. And, you know, you put him in a weight room and you show him, you know, let him get stronger. And I think it was a good pick. You know, I know a lot of people, the Giants are getting a lot of flack on it, but I think it's a good pick. So, besides that, I think they had an overall good draft, and I'm just, you know, just wanted to see training camp start. When is the first training camp?
Well, the date hasn't been officially announced, and Jeff in Rhode Island, right before you asked, like I said, 15 days usually you're allowed to start before your first preseason game. So you figure a little after July 15th should be the ballpark of when they'll be able to start training camp, given the fact that they're going to be taking part in that Hall of Fame game on August 3rd.
Oh, and now, yeah, and actually, you're not going to put Cullen Jenkins and those veterans out there, all those games, five. We've got five preseason games, so we're going to get a good look at all these draft picks, you know, and especially.
Well, even if you had four preseason games, you're going to get a good look at these guys because, you know, you're not going to play your starters, as you mentioned, Derek, and appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in because you don't want to put yourself in a position where you allow these guys to get hurt. So five preseason games versus four preseason games, to me, it really doesn't make a difference. They've got 90 players on the roster. They're going to have to whittle it down to 53. You're going to have to throw these guys in the mix immediately. If anything, it gives them an additional game for evaluation. That's the way I look at it. It's not necessarily a benefit for the starters. It's a benefit for the players that are the youngsters and the ones that are fighting for the borderline jobs. And it's a benefit for the scouting department and the coaching staff so that they'll have some additional film. But four preseason games was still going to give them the opportunity to at least throw these guys out there each and every contest. It's just that now you get started a little bit earlier. You can maybe work your regulars along a little bit slower, given that you have a little bit more flexibility. But at the end of the day, you know, what Derek was touching on, you want to preserve your regulars. You do not want to put them in a position to get hurt. And I think that they're going to have to overlook this a little bit more carefully compared to previous years, given that they're starting a little bit earlier. And Eli Manning, remember, is coming off of an injury, so you don't want to necessarily press him. JPP coming off injuries. There's a number of guys that they're expecting to make impacts that, you know, were really up and down last year due to the injury bug. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number, 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. You can follow and interact with me directly at Lance Meadow. One word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. Let's head back to the lines. We've got Len in Maryland. Len, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing, Lance?
Doing very well, Len. How about yourself? What you
good,
got?
Good, good, good. It's a beautiful morning down here in Maryland. Well, listen, solid B, you know, in my opinion. And if it was late afternoon and I had my favorite libation in front of me, I might even go to B+, given my Giant fandom.
Look at you in a kind mood this morning. How about that?
Oh, it's just solid. You know, I like the players. I think six of the seven probably make the 53. I think the concerns that Eric expressed and that you expressed a little bit about Jackson, he probably needs a year. But I think we got six guys who can, you know, can make this team. I don't know how many will be part of the 46 and get uniforms on Sunday, including that third-round pick. But, you know, I think it's a pretty good haul. Jerry did a good job. My final rating on this team, or the draft, I should say, is really going to depend on one thing. Here's my biggest concern, and this has nothing to do with Beckham. He's a fine player. There was a need there at wide receiver. He's a fine player. Here's my concern, though. Here's my question. Who starts at right guard on September 8th against the Lions?
Well, I think that...
If I was making the pick... Yeah, I know. If I was making the pick, Lance, I'd have gone Martin.
And I wouldn't necessarily criticize you for that.
Yeah, I would have gone offensive line. I'm going to root like heck for Beckham. I have nothing against Beckham. And again, there was a need, but I think maybe we could have addressed that a little further down the line. You know, the second-round pick, Lance, he's got to start. I mean, if Richburg doesn't start, it's a wasted pick. I mean, we signed a free agent center, and then we drafted a guy in the second round, 43rd pick. I mean, Richburg better be good enough to start.
Well, I think that he's going to be given an opportunity to really test J.D. Walton. But here's the thing that I'll throw back at you, Len. I understand the urgency to get him to start, but I look at it from this perspective. You're trying to also build the anchors for an offensive line that you hope to keep together for a good, perhaps, decade. Because what was the Giants' identity in previous decades? You know better than I do, Len. It was all about the O-line. And think about it. When they brought in guys like Deal and Seibert and so forth, you know, they had this group together. So I look at it more as, okay, you got Pugh on the right side. Now you brought in Richburg. You know, Beattie is not necessarily up there in age yet. You know, if you can get three or four guys that you could keep together for a good nucleus of years, you're set. And then there's not that unpredictability factor. So I can understand, right now, given how the line played last year, you want this guy to step in. I'm looking at more, I guess, from the big picture perspective.
Okay. Let me say one more thing before I move on to another topic. Let me say this about for me, and this is just me, it's a year-to-year league. I'm not thinking 5 years down the road, Lance. I'm thinking 2014, 10 wins, get back to the playoffs. That's where I'm coming from with my comment about this guy having, in my opinion, he's got to start. You know, the third round pick, you know, I hope the kid turns out to be a star. I'm not going to pretend I saw a lot of Syracuse games. I saw a little. I know one Syracuse game that I watched from beginning to end was the Notre Dame game, the bowl game at Yankee Stadium. And I do know who the most valuable player was in that game. I'm sure you remember too, don't you? It was Zach Martin.
Yep.
When was the last time an offensive lineman got the most valuable player award in any kind of game, even at the high school level? I mean, that was an unbelievable performance against a pretty good level of competition in Syracuse with a guy named Brumley playing defensive tackle. Hey, here's a bit of trivia for you. I don't know if anybody cares, but I found this to be interesting. In the seventh round, the Minnesota Vikings, by way of a trade with the Carolina Panthers, who got the pick originally from the New York Giants for John Beeson, the Vikings selected Jabari Prince, a quarterback at North Carolina. It'll be interesting to follow Jabari Prince's career as he goes on in the NFL. So
you're going to look back and see the value of the John Beeson trade. Look at you.
You
already got a pencil there.
There you go. There you go. There you go.
You're the only one losing sleep over that, Len, I can tell you.
No, Jim, that's one of the things I do. If we trade a pick, who did the team pick? That's what I do with the draft. I look at the list and I say, if we traded a fifth, who did that team get? You know, that sort of thing. So I just thought it was curious that if anybody cares, it's Jabari Prince from North Carolina. Hey, one other thing, you know, on the tight end, I'm not suggesting that we should have picked this guy, but one guy that came up a lot in the conversations, Paul Dottino threw his name out a number of times. Good for Paul. I'm not being critical when I say that. Arthur Lynch from Georgia. He was there in the fifth round. We picked Burley. We went for the safety. And Burley's probably going to be a pretty good player. We had to protect ourselves in the Hill situation for sure. And who knows about Andre Brown. And Burley, you know, if we get some work out of him a year or two, I mean, I don't know. He may be another Tyler Sash too, because he was a fifth-round pick, I think. So, I mean, you know, but I just pointed out that Lynch was available there.
And he went to the Dolphins about three picks later with the 155th selection. And his track record is that he's a good blocker, so he certainly is attractive from that perspective to fit into the Giants scheme. I just get back to Len the fact that, you know, they didn't want to reach at that point, and they
did not
like the grades on the bulk of the tight ends. So they said to themselves, what's the difference between Arthur Lynch, for example, than, you know, taking a chance on Kellen Davis and seeing how he can fit into the system, or, you know, giving Adrian Robinson another opportunity. I believe that was the rationale in the war room, at least at that point.
And I support, and you know what, I would support that. I think that's good thinking. The only reason I brought up Arthur Lynch's name was his name came up so much on calls. Paul had mentioned him. John had mentioned him a couple of times. And
well, the problem
is
you put too much stock in what those two gentlemen have to say. That's your first mistake, Len. You know, I mean, when I'm here hosting, you know, I don't really need to rehash what Paul is dreaming about during his power walks. But I'm glad that we were able to throw in a little recap.
Okay, let these guys get in here, get to work. Let's start working on that Hall of Fame career with all seven of these guys. And I think it was a good draft. And you know, you put the whole off season together, and you're bumping right up against the A. And if a tight end emerges here somewhere, and maybe one more offensive lineman, we give Jerry an A for the off season. But there's still just a little bit of work to do. Hey, Lance, thanks for taking my call. It's a great day to be a Giants fan.
Sounds good, Len. Always good chatting with you. Have a good day. Enjoy the weather in Maryland. It's also beautiful weather here in the New York, New Jersey area. And Jabari Prince, he's going to be the new player that I'm going to focus on for the rest of his duration in the NFL, or for the rest of wherever his career takes him, because Len throwing out a little trivia in terms of the John Beeson trade. 201-939-4513. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat. We'll get to more of your tweets momentarily. I have a number of people waiting on the line, so I want to try to get them in. You can also follow and interact with me at Lance Meadow. One word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. Earl is in California. Earl, welcome to the program. What you got?
Hey, what's going on, man?
Doing well, Earl. How's everything with you? What you got?
I watched the draft, and I thought we did pretty good. You know, we got a really, I think, good receiver. I think that center we drafted, I think he'll start. And then Bromley, he reminds me of a little bit of Canty with his size and his moves and his overall, you know, abilities. Yesterday I was pretty bored, so I went back and I watched on my DVR the Raiders and Giants game, and I was watching Beattie just get beat when he was healthy. I mean, he was getting bull rushed. I mean, Lamar Houston was just, he'd bull rush him and bull rush him, and then all of a sudden he'd swim him, and then he'd get him into the inside. I mean, I don't think, I think we have a real problem with Beattie, and it was him being his leg broken. I mean, have you seen him lately? Does he look bigger? Does he look stronger? You know, have you seen him lately?
Well, I haven't necessarily had interaction with him recently, but, you know, from other people, I know that he's very into the rehab process, and he spoke to the media a few weeks back when everybody arrived on the scene here at the facility, and, you know, he said that he's not necessarily given an exact timetable for his return, but he's confident that he's going to be on track. It's a process, as any player has to go through via injury. Getting back to your concerns, and I understand you went back and watched the video, and we've talked about this in great detail, Earl, and you know what jumps out to me about Beattie, and I'm not necessarily in the business of giving you a laundry list of excuses, but you do need to take into consideration, regardless of how he performed as an individual, the fact that he never had a consistent guard next to him. And I was talking to Greg Cosell with John Schmelk last week of NFL Films, who breaks down a lot of film of all players, and I asked him that question. He said you have to take that into consideration when evaluating a guy like Beattie. And you know, based on your viewership of Giants games, it was a game of musical chairs. A tackle is very reliant on the guy next to him. And if he doesn't have a great deal of confidence, or there's a discomfort there, sometimes he's going to get out of rhythm and he's going to do things to overcompensate or hear the footsteps. So I think you at least need to take that into consideration, and also take into consideration his track record. You know, prior to last season, you weren't raising the same concerns that you just did, Earl, about Will Beattie. So, you know, maybe I'm throwing out here, give him the benefit of the doubt. Let's see what happens this year before all of a sudden we start to label him maybe heading to a downfall. I think it's way too early to speculate about that.
Yeah, I was just watching it. It seemed like Lamar Houston was just setting him up, though. You know what I mean? Beattie did have him a couple times where he'd block him. I mean, I don't think he did terrible, but I just seemed like he got set up really easily. He'd get bull rushed, and then then it'd be a run, and then he'd block him really well, and then he'd bull rush him again on another pass, and he'd block him right there, and then all of a sudden, you know, he bull rushed him again, and then all of a sudden, you know, Eli gets sacked, and then he'd bull rush him again. We'd run another play. He'd block him well, and then he gets swim inside, and all of a sudden, you know, it's another sack for Eli. And it's like, I don't know. I mean, the pass protection with Peyton Hillis too. That was pretty horrible too. So, I mean, I don't know. I'm just kind of concerned with the overall protection of the line. But I think our tight ends might show up. You know what I mean? I'm pretty confident that we might be able to get something out of Adrian Robinson though.
Well, the clock is ticking with respect to Adrian Robinson. The big key for him is he needs to stay healthy. If you don't stay healthy, you can't make an impact on this team. And I was talking to Eric Kennedy of Big Blue Interactive earlier, and he brought up the whole Lions game. And that's the one game that jumps into my head when you talk about Adrian Robinson. Late in the season, week 16, he has an opportunity, given all the injuries, opening kickoff, he gets hurt, and he doesn't play the rest of the way. So, you know, I mean, how many more opportunities does he have to have staring at him in his face? This is the golden opportunity for Adrian Robinson. I think there's potential out of this group. I would agree with you, Earl, but you know, they need to see the writing on the wall that it's now or never, because this is the one season where they didn't draft the tight end and they didn't necessarily go out and bring in a big name via free agency. So, you know, he's really got a great chance to make an impact on this team.
All right, well, thanks, Lance, for taking my phone call. I appreciate it.
You got it, Earl. Not a problem. Getting back to Earl's concerns about the offensive line and Peyton Hillis's blocking, that was a big reason why the Giants addressed the offensive line via free agency. It wasn't as if they didn't realize what the major issues for this team. The number 39, that was the magical number last year. That was how many times Eli Manning was sacked. That was a career worst. And part of it was because of injuries. And the game of musical chairs, there wasn't much consistency. How many games, and I have to look back at my notes, I don't have them in front of me, did the same five guys play on the O-line? How many times? I mean, you probably only need one hand, if you're lucky. I mean, that says a lot. How many teams in this league win consistently when you have a makeshift patchwork offensive line? When you've got a different guard in every game, you move the center around. Remember, Boston Snee, who were supposed to be reliable guys, you lose two starters right off the bat. And then, you know, Cordell comes in, he gets hurt. Deal was out, Deal comes back. Kevin Booth gets moved around. Brewer in and out of the lineup. I just named you five or six guys that weren't playing 16 games. So, you know, when we sit here and we break down film and we say, well, this guy was disappointing, here's the best way to sum up the Giants' offensive line last season. The whole group was disappointing. The Giants are not in the business of patting individuals on the back saying, hey, you know, thanks for getting us to 7-9. And I think that the executive branch showcased that during their postseason press conferences. The goal is five offensive line who can stay healthy, playing next to one another consistently. You do that, I think that is a huge step in the right direction. That's the key. And in the event somebody does go down, and you need to prepare for that, very difficult for you to completely avoid injuries. I think the goal this year, more so than last year, is to say, okay, hypothetically, let's say Beatty is not ready. Instead of taking somebody from a guard spot or Pugh at the right tackle and moving him to left tackle, let's just take the guy right behind him on the depth chart and move him in. For example, Charles Brown. What was happening last year, keep in mind, is let's say the center went down. So Booth would then move from guard to center. It wasn't as if, okay, we have another center behind Cordell, so we'll all of a sudden just move in the next guy. This season, I think the goal is we're going to have two or three guys behind each starter so that we don't have to move around guys each and every week. That was happening more often than not, and that's not necessarily a good script to follow. 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. On Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat at Lance Meadow. One word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. Shakes is in Baltimore. Shakes, how we doing?
I'm on the fence, man.
You're on the fence? All right.
Yeah, I'm on the fence.
Well, let's get you off the fence here. Let's see how we can help you out.
All right, listen. I love the draft, okay? I want people to understand this, okay? The draft was good to me, all right? I give it a B, maybe B plus, okay? With that said, y'all, Lance, I feel like I said this on Friday, or I think it was Saturday, I'm not sure, whatever. But we dropped the ball on getting that tight end in the second round. Now, you say, well, maybe, you know, they wasn't really impressed on the tight end class. And, okay, that's fine. Maybe you wasn't. But, and I'm not a scout, you know. I'm not a scout. I don't get paid millions for it, all right? But let's think. Last season, I said Arthur Brown was going to be nice. I said Ogletree was going to be nice. I said Kinko Alonso was going to be nice, okay? All these guys turned out to be good. But last year, that's what y'all told me. We wasn't really impressed with the linebacker class. Johns wasn't impressed with the and these guys turned out to be beasts, okay? So just because the Giants scouts is not impressed with these guys don't mean that they wasn't good. I don't understand why. I got an analogy for you, okay? You still with me?
I'm with you. I'm listening. I'm all ears here. I'm waiting for this analogy. You got me excited.
Here we go. All right? The analogy is this. We go to a fruit market, right? We go to a fruit market. We need to get...
I hope it's in Brooklyn, by the way.
Wherever. It could be in the Bahamas. I don't care. Listen. we
loosen up here, Shakes. You know, I'm trying to keep things light. You're way too serious.
Okay.
My goodness.
All right.
Jeez.
All right. We need three
The Bahamas,
things, right?
The fruit store. I got you. Okay.
We need a thing of grapes. We need a thing of oranges. And we need a thing of apples. Okay? And when we get in the fruit market... We get the best batch of grapes, okay? One of the best, all right? Now, then you go to the oranges and the apples. Now, there's only two oranges left in the basket, okay? But in the basket, it is 12 apples, 12, 13 apples, good ones, that you can have. You're not going to grab one of those oranges up first and make sure that you get the orange? That's what I feel like. We came in the draft. We needed a playmaker at wide receiver. We needed a tight end to score in the red zone, and we need offensive line help. In the second round, we could have went tight end. In the third round, they were still valuable starters. That's going to be starters still left in the third round. So us jumping the gun in the second round is just it's like, why? Why did we do this? I mean, I understand we needed to keep Eli upright. I know. I've been saying that for years now, okay? But also what I have been saying is stop poo-pooping on the linebacker and the tight end positions because they are important.
Well, but keep this in mind, though. And Eric Kennedy brought this up. You're under the assumption that the tight end is still going to be featured like it was perhaps in previous years. We don't know that. I mean, that's a big assumption. Maybe Ben McAdoo doesn't necessarily treat the tight end as we're thinking he's going to treat it. So I think that's at least something you need to take into consideration. That's a little curveball to throw in. And let's get back to the second round pick here. In my opinion, they got arguably the best center that was out there in terms of all the prospects at that position. And if there was one area in the offensive line where I don't think they had a true solution, I would say it was center.
Yeah.
You just said that if they can get, like, the top guy perhaps at that respective position, I don't think you can really fault them for doing that. Whereas tight end, you weren't going to get the top guy because Ebron was already off the board. So you knew that. You knew everybody behind Ebron, you're settling at least for the next top talent. With Richburg, in my opinion, you're getting the best center out there.
I like that point. I'm still a little bit upset about how we did it, you know. But overall draft was great to me. I love it. My favorite picks is Beckham and Andre Williams. I think Andre Williams is going to be a beast, man, and you throw him and Jennings, and if Wilson come back healthy, we got a great three-man rotation, great. And then we got the offensive lineman to back it up, so it's been a great draft. But I have another thing to ask you. Now, we signed Xavier Grimble. I've seen highlights of this dude. This guy is carrying four guys on his back, and it was multiple times that he did this, okay? But USC has not used him a lot. I mean, if you look at the highlights, it's probably like, 15 seconds. I mean, but
well,
they were good.
First of all, Shakes, no, I don't mean to cut you off. I'll let you continue. I know who you're talking about. I've read the speculation. I can't say anything in particular because it's not official. So you have to keep that in mind. These guys need to go through physicals and everything. I know exactly who you're talking about. You're talking about the USC tight end. He's 6'4". He's got a lot of size. I understand that. But right now, I mean, to say that he's definitely penciled in on the Giants roster would be premature because the Giants have yet to make anything official.
Okay, yeah, but just – It seems like it's going to be official. So, and if he is on the team, what do you feel and what do you think about him? Because my assumption is he needs to get stronger and he lacks a little bit of agility. But all in all, I mean, this is probably our future tight end.
Well, I hope that your words come to fruition only because then you won't keep second-guessing the fact that the Giants passed over all those other tight ends. So, I mean, I'm just pulling for the signing to be official just so that we can please you at least, and then you could smile, and then you could be happy that we have a proven tight end. So, I mean, that's at least my philosophy. Whenever you can get a guy that can block, run routes, I think that's a big positive. He wasn't necessarily, based on what I saw at USC, you know, the most prolific tight end. But I think that if the Giants do make it official, there's room for him to make an impact on this team. And he would be a red zone target based on his agility and his size. So, yes, I think that it would be a valuable signing if it does become official. And he would help push the current guys here because, you know, I'm not losing track of the guys that are currently on this roster. I still think there's some raw talent here, but I think these guys need to be pushed because I don't know if they truly understand that they lost some of their key competitors that were in front of them on the depth chart and that one of them could literally be the week one starter if they take the bull by the horns right now.
Yeah, you're totally right, Lance. Last thing I'm going to say is we're airing a special show today on the Shakedown. It's 4 o'clock p.m. Eastern. Try to check that out. Also, you can also download episodes on iTunes, so...
Look at you, man, up and running. You got the technology. Did you sign with an agent yet? I mean, I think that would be the next move.
Hey, man, I'm looking, man. If you're an agent and you want to represent Shakes, give me a call.
There you go. Listen, we do what we can to promote Shakes. All right, you take it easy. Shakes in Maryland, there you go. He's got his own podcast. He's got his own website. He's got a big following here on Twitter. I mean, he's living the life, though he's still a little down about the tight end. I thought the energy was good. You know, we're all caught up in grading the draft. I would like to hear some feedback about Shake's phone call. Let's put it that way. Anybody who wants to grade the phone call this morning, you know, I'm taking any feedback that we could get via Twitter. Hashtag Giants Chat at Lance Meadow, one word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. Compared to where the meter was last week, I like the energy. You know, he started off on a good note. I didn't necessarily have to pull him out from wherever he was hiding. You know, normally he's very low-key, mellow. We got some fruit analogies. I thought he was creative, so he certainly gets some bonus points from that perspective. Let's head back to the lines. Let's see where Terrence in Charlotte takes us. Terrence, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing all right, Terrence. How about yourself? What
you got? Good. All right, I got a question with the Bromley draft. And I just think a lot of people just being so uptight about that draft. I think it's a good draft pick. The guy's a real good defensive player. He's been doing it for 4 years for Syracuse. Like I said, he has 10 sacks as a defensive tackle. That's crazy.
That is impressive because normally that position, does not get to the quarterback. I don't care if it's at the college level or the pro level. You're right. If you can get to the quarterback that often, and it's not as if Syracuse had a Mickey Mouse schedule. So, I think you need to take that into consideration as well.
Yes, the guy has long arms. I think he's going to be just a situational pass. He's going to be like a third down pass rusher in the middle. Because he's like you said, he has the ability to get to the quarterback and everything, and you can also use him on the end as a goal line defensive end, a bigger defensive end than like Pierre Paul and Kiwanuka. I mean,
it's possible. I think they would probably keep their internal options at the defensive end spot because he was even asked about this, Jerry Reese and Tom Coughlin. Doesn't really have a great deal of experience on the outside edge. I mean, certainly they could be creative in certain formations, but I would be surprised if they actually toyed with him being on the edge. I think they look at him as a guy that can move the pile from the inside.
I mean, they did the same thing with Colin Jenkins and Cansey. They did them.
Well, but keep in mind, those two players in particular, though, keep in mind, Terrence, they had experience playing both positions before they even came to the Giants. So I think it's a little bit different in terms of the comparison. They're always willing to experiment, and I understand where you're coming from, but when you talk about Jenkins and Canty, before they even suited up for the Giants, they had already been on the outside. So it wasn't as if they were just saying, all right, let's just throw them on the outside for the sake of throwing them on the outside.
I got you, I got you. But he also played defensive end in Syracuse, too. He played some.
But the majority of the recent years has been at defensive tackle.
Yes. But his flexibility, I mean, not the flexibility, but his size and speed for inside the pass rush, I think they got some projects they're going to do with him. And I also think, you know, like I said, he's going to be a situation where they're going to put him on third down as a pass rusher and just go after the quarterback where, you know, it's a passing down, not a running down. But I also have a question with the tight ends. Everybody having to just going crazy about these tight ends. These tight ends come dime in a dozen. You can get you a power forward out of the NBA, out of the NCAA that's a reject and say, hey, you want to play tight end for me? Because that's what a lot of these guys are doing now.
A lot of the tight ends in the league right now also had a basketball past. I mean, look at Antonio Gates, look at Jimmy Graham. So your point is well taken. I still think that you can get a quality guy in the draft. I think tight ends are not, you know, a position that maybe you can automatically grab off the street like perhaps a running back. I think there's a slight disparity between those positions. I think running backs maybe are more a dime a dozen than a tight end. But you're right. We've seen a lot of guys transition into that position. So that's a good point, Terrence.
I mean, you got this guy from Philadelphia. They signed a 6'9", who haven't played football in about four or five years. I mean, come on. They come. And you got Thomas out of Denver. He was what, undrafted free agent?
Julius Thomas? I believe that he wasn't necessarily a big name coming in. I have to look up his exact past.
No, I mean, and then you have the guy out of Washington, Jordan Reed. I mean, these were guys that wasn't even drafted. But, hey, look at him.
Julius Thomas was a fourth-round pick in 2011, so he was
drafted. Yes, exactly,
and
right.
Jordan Reed was drafted. He actually he was a pretty big prospect. There were high hopes for him, so he wasn't necessarily an unknown commodity coming into this league. Jordan Reed, he was a third-round pick last year.
Yes. It's a lot of guys from a lot of small colleges that, you know, that are good prospects and that, you know, that can be a tight end. But like I said, I just think this whole tight end thing, like you said, we have developed tight ends over years. I mean, like you said, Ballard and
Kevin Boss. There's a number of guys.
Boss.
Even Martellus Bennett, who didn't have a primary role in Dallas. He was backing up Jason Witten. So that's why I go back to the track record here. I don't think enough people have faith in the Giants' resume. And you guys and gals have seen it each and every year. I understand that Brandon Myers didn't work out. I buy that. But prior to that, they had a stretch of three straight guys that weren't necessarily big-name commodities.
I think Brandon Myers was just too small. I didn't like the fact that he was just too small for me. I think a lot of our tight ends was big tight ends. That, you know, Eli throws a high ball, and that's his thing. He throws a high ball. That's why he struggled most of this year, because he had nobody over the middle to catch that high ball, and a lot of them was picks.
Well, I think that was one part of it. I absolutely agree with you, Terrence. And I think the other part of it was that he came from an Oakland system where he was looked at as a wide receiver. And in the Giants system, they looked at him more as a blocking tight end who then would complement that with his receiving skills. And he wasn't necessarily comfortable in that spot.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. Like I said, when they signed him, I was like, I don't like that pick at all. I think they should have went with Bennett over that. I mean, because, like I said, he was just too small. And I knew from the get-go he was just too small to play tight end for Eli. Eli liked big targets. I mean,
Martellus Bennett was a big guy. And listen, in an ideal world, Terrence, I would agree with you. If they had enough flexibility and cap space, they would have loved to keep Martellus Bennett and still had him in the mix, and he would have been able to pick up where he left off the previous season because he was a huge red zone target. You're absolutely right. Unfortunately, it came down to finances.
That's true. Well, okay.
All right,
that's
Terrence.
All I have.
You got it. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in this morning. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat at Lance Meadow. One word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. And, you know, I'm glad that Terrence emphasized what I've been emphasizing. I know I sound like a broken record about the Giants track record when it comes to tight ends. And just listening to Shakes and what some other people weighed in on, and not everybody, it would be unfair to generalize, but I'm surprised that a number of people aren't necessarily having faith in the Giants' track record when it comes to the tight end position. I feel as if Brandon Myers' season is overshadowing everything. So the urgency for a tight end has absolutely skyrocketed. But during the season when Martellus Bennett was here, we were not having discussions as often as we were about the tight end spot. Same thing with when Kevin Boss and Jake Ballard produced. Yes, I understand Travis Beckham, guys and gals, were not necessarily patting him on the back. I buy that. But there was a three-year stretch where the Giants took a player that had not had a prominent role the previous year. Mike Pope had faith, developed them, and voila, they blossomed into a very productive tight end. Unfortunately, they could not make it 4 years in a row because Brandon Myers did not necessarily pan out. That doesn't mean that they then can't go back to their old tricks and follow the same script. Is there a guarantee? No. But I think that the benefit of the doubt needs to at least enter the discussion. And there are players here that are worth toying with a little. Maybe more so with Larry Donnell than Adrian Robinson. And the reason I emphasize Donnell is the fact that, you know, he was a guy that had a very productive camp last year. But he was playing behind a few other guys. So that was one thing that held him back. Then there was the injury bug. So there was a number of things that played a role in why Donnell didn't necessarily blossom from day one. Perhaps now, hey, there's really no one penciled in that number one spot. You know, this could be the opportunity for him to really make some noise. Let's head back to the lines. We've got Rob in New Jersey. Rob, what's happening?
Hey, how's it going this morning?
Doing well, Rob. How about yourself? What you got?
Pretty good. I just want to say to everybody, Coach Pope, he's the man. I mean, I totally hear what you're saying as far as people not having faith in the tight in the development of the red and white chip talent. I mean, over the last couple of years, just like you were just saying, that the stuff he was able to do with our tight ends was just great.
Well, and real quickly, I just want to piggyback off of the point you just brought up, Rob, and then I'll let you continue. Didn't mean to cut you off. Barden, actually, on Twitter, at Neo Hybrix, brings up the point that it's about the loss of Pope, because you just brought up Mike Pope's name, not our ignoring the history, quite the opposite. So I just wanted to counter to this tweet and piggyback off of what you said. Barden, my answer to you would be, well, Ben McAdoo has a similar track record to Mike Pope. He may not be in the league as often, but if you look at the Packers tight ends that he developed, JerMichael Finley, he's responsible for developing, and also a guy named Tom Crabtree. And Tom Crabtree was not a household name. So if you want to say that you're leery because Mike Pope is no longer in the picture, then I would say look at Ben McAdoo, look at the history of tight ends that he's worked with. Didn't mean to cut you off, Rob. I'll let you continue.
No, thanks. And I just wanted to say Shapes woke me up about Andre Williams this morning, too. I spent about an hour looking at that guy's highlights on YouTube last night, and he's a beast. He's going to be a rough and tumble running back for our offense. He's gonna really take right to the field.
Well, if Shakes emphasizes it, you can't go wrong, Rob. And the fact that you're echoing his sentiments is just another pat on the back for Shakes. So I'm glad at least somebody is listening to what he has to say on this program.
No, Shakes was great. He had a fruit analogy and everything.
See, I told
my
you.
Mind with that.
There you go. He mixes it up. You got to give him brownie points for that.
All right, thanks, man. I just wanted to weigh in on that.
Sounds good, Rob, and appreciate the phone call. And, you know, Rob emphasizing what I brought up about the tight end spot. And I know that there's skepticism, and, you know, Barden on Twitter threw that out. And listen, feel free to chime in on Twitter. You know, I like the discussion about the tight end. I think this is pretty much the heart and soul of the debate when it comes to the Giants roster right now, especially with the draft over. Because you look at, okay, this is what the Giants address. This is maybe where their area of need. And we pretty much looked at the candidates in the draft. We heard what Coughlin and Reese had to say. So now you look at who's out there that's undrafted. But, you know, I don't think enough people, once again, are looking back at what the roster looked like before Brandon Myers. Go back and look at Martellus Bennett's numbers. Martellus Bennett's numbers were pretty impressive. And keep in mind, he slowed down because he had the knee injury. He stays healthy during that whole season. Who knows? Who knows what he's able to put up? He slowed down, but then towards the latter stage of the season, his numbers picked up again. But early in the year, he had, what, like three or four straight games where he caught a touchdown. He came out with a bang. And he had the touchdown in that first game against the Cowboys in week number one at the stadium. So Martellus Bennett was a huge red zone target. And Ballard and Boss, I mean, you're talking about guys that contributed to Super Bowls. And Ballard was a guy that, you know, I remember we talked about this a great deal with John Schmoke on the program. You'd watch him, it would look like he'd run in slow motion. You know, the guy wasn't fast. It didn't look like he had a tremendous amount of versatility. And then all of a sudden, he'd be passing by linebackers, and he'd be in the end zone in the corner for a touchdown. The one game that jumps out to me, I believe, was New England, and he caught the game-winning touchdown in the corner of the end zone. That's the Jake Ballard performance to me that stands out. He had a number of big plays during the course of that season. Unfortunately, he got hurt, the torn ACL. Beckham wound up tearing his ACL too, and they weren't able to keep tight ends. And I remember looking back at that stretch of tight ends, I was concerned from a continuity standpoint. Regardless of the fact that the Giants were able to develop this position, I was worried, you know, each and every year you keep bringing in a new tight end. When are we going to have one season where you have the same tight end for consecutive years? But it worked. Brandon Myers was the fourth tight end in as many years, and now we're going to have the fifth tight end in as many years, at least from a starter's position. 201-939-4513. 201-939-4513. Lance Meadow with you here on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. Steve is in D.C. Steve, what's happening?
What's up, Al? Buddy?
How we doing?
How you doing, baby?
I'm doing all right. How about yourself?
I'm good. First of all, I'm going to go ahead and throw my grade out. I give it a B, barely a B, but a B. And I just want to say this. Number one, wow, where do I start, man? You know, that third pick is a head-scratcher for me as well, you know. And I mean, you know, before I got going into this draft, I kind of, you know, I said, I don't know what it is with Tom Coughlin and Syracuse players. But I know what it is, but it needs to stop. And hopefully this is his, you know, this is the last year. It's got to stop. The ring is on it. Syracuse, Boston College, and Notre Dame. You can always bet there's somebody even close to being, you know, picked.
Well, don't forget LSU. Don't forget LSU, too. Come on. You got to spread the wealth on this program.
I'm not going to spread the wealth on the program. I don't give you that because this all the players out of LSU. I mean, that's the SEC, number one. So I respect that. But, the thing is this. Everybody wants to blame me. Those Tom Coughlin picks, I know they've been. They always have been. So, you know, I feel like, you know, unfortunately, Reese has really just kind of left to broker the deals and get the best deal. I'm going to go ahead and give it a B. You know, I know a lot of that's going to rub a few people wrong, but my man Terrence brought up Eli and how he likes to throw high. Yeah, he likes to throw high. That's why all our tight ends remain hurt, and nobody's quick to re-sign because they're tired of chasing them high balls that lead to injuries, tip balls, which leads to interceptions, period. The balls, and it also is shown that he's throwing off his back foot. That's got to stop. We got all the talent we need to make a Super Bowl run, but we cannot have Eli throwing high balls. That is not good, people. Okay, when you hear that, that's not good. That means he's throwing off his back foot. Yeah, he's being rushed. He's being this and the other. Listen, it's got to stop. I do not want these players hurt because they're chasing high balls, period. Kid, people trying to make the team, chasing Eli's high balls. I'm excited about the possibilities, but the common denominator with the tight end, and I mean, I'm not a Brandon Myers fan at all, but look who threw him 79 passes the year before. If Eli could have got them balls down, he would have played a lot better. It wasn't just a size. Yeah, he didn't want to block, and I'm certainly not a fan, but he was just unwilling to chase some high balls. People need to realize that. You got to realize that, okay? People getting hurt behind it.
Well, but there are wide receivers that go up for the high balls, too. You got to keep that in mind. It's not necessarily just the tight ends.
And when they're at, hurt. They hurt. Everybody getting hurt. That's what happens, okay? High balls lead to interceptions and injuries. That's why we're going to go to this, you know, more of a West Coast style, get those balls down, shorter passes. Eli's got a go ahead and be a little bit more methodical and stop trying to throw the home run ball all the time. It wasn't just play calling. Eli needs to learn to love to be on the field, be more of a general rather than just trying to drop a nuclear bomb on everybody. We need to come in and, you know, throw off some studs instead of, I'm frustrated because I'm excited, but I'm worried. I'm worried that our players are going to get hurt chasing them high balls. And I know you don't have an answer for me. You know, nobody has an answer, but I'm telling you, people need to realize that. You cannot continue to throw high balls. That's what's causing interceptions. There's too much air underneath them, and he's still blown off his back foot. So we did need an offensive lineman, and that's why I was all for Lewan, because I don't want Eli throwing off his back foot. Understand that, people. I'm happy with the draft. Sorry I can't be all upbeat, because, like I said, I'm excited, but I'm worried at the same time. I mean, love the kid, you know, the running back. I mean, we got it, you know. Recent, you know, time for Coughlin, they did a good job. I'll give him a B. But now it's time for Eli to perform, so.
Well, first, he's got to get fully healthy, Steve. You got to keep that in mind.
Yeah, I know. And, I mean, Lord knows. I mean, he's the answer, though. He is the answer to our offense. And I think we, you know, like I said, we have all the pieces around him, man. It's time to go do it. I'm excited, you know, but I just want to see what Eli does in this new system, because if he continues to throw high balls, interceptions, injuries, remember that. Hey, great show. Thanks for taking my call. And, I'll catch you soon, buddy.
All right, Steve. Good speaking with you. In terms of the point that Steve was bringing up about that the Giants tend to take too many Syracuse and Notre Dame guys, I really think that's completely blown out of proportion. And I brought up the Giants draft history, and I wanted to at least counter that claim, because I think that the last 2 years there's been a few Syracuse players, and we tend to think that since Coughlin arrived, that's all he takes, and that's not necessarily the case. Let's look back at 2004, the first year. He took Chris Snee, his son-in-law, out of Boston College. Chris Snee turned out to be a pretty good pick. I don't think anyone's really criticizing that. In 2005, they did not take anyone from Syracuse or Boston College. They took Justin Tuck out of Notre Dame. Once again, that turned out to be a pretty good pick. In 2006, they took Matthias Kiwanuka out of Boston College. And Kiwanuka obviously has been moved around on the line. But those last 2 years, no Syracuse players, by the way. 2007, no Syracuse players, no Boston College players, no Notre Dame players. 2008, no Syracuse players, no Notre Dame players, no Boston College players. 2009, once again, no Syracuse, no Notre Dame, no Boston College. That's three straight years, no players from any of those schools. 2010, once again, none of the above. 2011, once again, none of the above. So we're talking about five straight years they did not take any Syracuse, Notre Dame, or Boston College players. Once again, I think this plot is just blown out of proportion. Then you get to 2012. Okay, obviously. No, excuse me, not 2012, 2013. You have Justin Pugh and Ryan Nassib. Okay, so that was two guys from Syracuse in 1 year, and then you add Bromley into the mix. But we're talking about a very small section. There was a five-year span where there weren't any players from that school. So when we start to make generalizations that all Tom Coughlin does is look for Syracuse players, I don't think that is 100% accurate. Let's head back to the phone lines, and we'll take our final call of the program. Let's go to Rod in Indianapolis. Rod, what's happening?
What's going on, Lance? How are you today, buddy?
Doing very well, Rod. How about yourself?
Good, good, good. Steve hit it on the nose for me. I'm a huge Giants fan. I give the Giants a B+, and the A will come later with some of the development of the first three rounders there. But my, I'm happy they picked up ODB for the first round, But I was banking on, I was at work, and you know the rumor mill started swelling. You know, and they were saying Manziel possibly to the Giants. I wasn't in favor of that pick, but I wanted it to happen because I want Eli to be put on notice. I think Eli, he's a good quarterback. He got us two. In the real world, most Super Bowl champion teams, they get one miracle play in a lifetime. We had two. The football gods were in favor of the Giants, okay? And I think Eli gets a lot of credit for those. He should be given some credit because those guys, he threw it. Those guys caught it, and those guys are referencing Tyree and Manningham. Now, with that being said, Steve brought up a very great point. Eli Manning ball placement is horrendous. If you take the Manning off his jersey and you put Eli Grossman or Eli Russell, we'll be talking about a different player here. His ball placement is terrible. And I think by drafting Johnny Manziel or a quarterback, even if it was the second round, where they told Eli, look, we can't play this out for another 5 years, okay, because we gave you five to begin with, and we worked with you and let you grow into your development stage there. Last quick pointer. Now, with that being said, Eli Manning, you look at the receiving core that he had. He had Victor Cruz. You had Mario Manningham. You had Hakeem Nicks. Arguably one of the top receiver core in the league about 3 years ago. Hakeem Nicks' catch radius is at an elite level. The fact that he wasn't catching any balls or even the stud Ruud Randle, because they're business decisions. Eli's throwing the ball wherever he wants just to release it, and you expect these guys to catch it and then get hurt. And I feel bad for Hakeem because he didn't catch any balls and got some play. Eli wasn't
though, how much did the offensive line, though, contribute to those trends? Let's not forget about that.
True. I understand, Lance. Now, the O-line is very important. This is why Eli, the in-pocket quarterback that's about to be a fossil, because Eli is not mobile. You got to put a wall in front of him, and it has to be a wall that can hold the line for 10 seconds, and that's not being realistic. That's not Eli Manning. You can put – I mean, I like what the Giants did. They said, here's a DeSean Jackson type of receiver, Eli. We brought in a savvy offensive coordinator, Eli. If he can't get it done now, what do we do?
You need to keep in mind, Rod, though. The new offensive coordinator is going to come in with some new wrinkles. So I think we're all thinking it's going to be a duplication of Kevin Gilbride's system. You know, if it's got West Coast principles, Manning may be getting rid of the football real quickly, and he's not throwing bombs down the field. You know, they're throwing some short passes. They're getting the running backs involved. So, you know, I understand the concerns that you raised. I still think the offensive line was a big contributor as to why, at least last season, there were a lot of high balls, because I think he was just trying to press the envelope, put it out there, and hope that his wide receivers could bail him out. I understand where you're getting that. If he has a little bit more time, though, I think the ball placement is probably going to be in a spot where he's not leaving his guys out to dry. So that, to me, was a huge element last season that needs to be taken into consideration. Was his decision-making off, Rod? Absolutely. But the offensive line was a big contributing factor to that.
So where do you rate Green Bay's offensive line?
Well, Green Bay's offensive line has had its fair share of ups and downs. Don't get me wrong. I mean, Aaron Rodgers. You're right, but Aaron Rodgers is a mobile quarterback, Rod. Let's not forget about that. Eli Manning's not running out to the sideline and throwing, okay, because it's going to take him a few extra seconds compared to Aaron Rodgers. So you also need to take into consideration Rodgers has different characteristics than Eli Manning. You know, if you're going to compare offensive lines, then I think I need a quarterback that has the same mobility as Eli Manning. It would be unfair to compare a mobile quarterback to a guy that pretty much likes to stay within the pocket.
So as a huge Giants fan, I'm happy Gilbride is gone, and I'm excited about what McAdoo brings to the table. So based off of your knowledge and insight, are we going to see a modified McAdoo style of play because Eli's not mobile?
Well, I think that we're probably going to see some elements of what was showcased with the Packers under Mike McCarthy, because clearly Ben McAdoo learned from Mike McCarthy, and Mike McCarthy was under plenty of greats within the Niners organization, so everyone's leading up to a blueprint of the West Coast system. Yes, it's not going to be identical to Green Bay, because you're right, the quarterback style is different, but I think given the fact that they've brought now in three wide receivers that they can put out there on the field at the same time, you have Rashad Jennings who could catch the football out of the backfield, if you put all of these elements together, Rod, I think, yes, that there's going to be an emphasis on let's spread the wealth, let's put pressure on the defense, and we don't necessarily have to wait till Victor Cruz gets all the way down the field. We can set these guys up, and they have the ability to make plays. Odell Beckham Jr., who they just drafted in round one, Rod, you know, he's the type of guy, you give him the ball 5 yards, he could turn it into a 25-yard gain. So I think they're going to look to that.
I agree. And my only concern with that is Eli going to make the right play, or is he going to look downfield for the home run? Well, if he wants to get his yards quick and easy, and he gets his yardage in bunches from long passes, and his short game is not nice. I'm just being honest. I'm not a fan of it because he makes bad decisions. He panics.
Well, keep this in mind, Rod. Though I would argue, based on how the offensive line performed last season, the offense to me showed signs of improvement when they actually started to dump the ball off to the running backs and the fullbacks and the wide receivers on shorter routes, especially when Jernigan got involved. Jernigan wasn't catching bombs; he was catching mid-length football. balls. So I would say that the problem that happened, in my opinion, is they got caught up with the long ball after that productive season. Then all of a sudden they thought they would pick up where they left off. Issues with the offensive line. Manning still wanted to go for the home run. It didn't work. They had to make tweaks. I think this season they probably looked at what happened over the last 2 years, and the ideal world would be to have balance. You want to hit the home run, but at the same time you want to be able to work progressively down the field.
Yeah, and my last thing is this, and I'm out here. I think that McAdoo saw something in Adrian Robinson or Donnell, because there's no way the Giants don't draft a tight end. There's no way at all. I don't care if it's a seventh-round tight end. But this guy must have shown him something, you know, Finley type of skill set, for them to say, we're just going to play this out and see what he can bring to the table. That's just my opinion. He's had to see something.
Well, I agree with you, Ryan. Listen, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. And that's what I've been emphasizing. I think they have faith in the current group. You're right. Adrian Robinson certainly is included in that group. I would agree wholeheartedly with that claim. And that's part of the reason why they probably did not draft anybody. They could still bring in somebody now after the draft, but they believe there is perhaps some talent within this group. They just need to peel back the layers, find it, and allow that player to shine on the field. That's the bottom line. So 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. That will wrap up the phone calls this morning. A lot of good interaction, a lot of good feedback from the fans. If I did not address some of your tweets, I'll try to get back to you moving forward the rest of the afternoon, but feel free to continue to chime in, hashtag Giants Chat, and you could follow and interact with me at Lance Meadow, one word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. Appreciate everybody for listening in and weighing in. Stay locked to Giants.com each and every morning with Big Blue Kickoff Live at 9:30 a.m. Eastern. Keep close tabs on Giants.com. We'll have the latest intel if the Giants do add anyone new to the roster. And there's a bunch of great features and videos on all of the new draft picks. So certainly make sure you tune into that and you check out all of the material on the site. Lance Meadows signing off. Have a good one. Enjoy.